the fact that you are collecting, you know, their name, their email address, their mail address, their phone number, anything. This is all personal identifiable information. This is like the technical language of the GDPR. But the, you know, the best way to understand it is that you are basically collecting information that helps you identify a consumer. And if you are doing that, then you owe them a certain level of responsibility and accountability.
In this day and age, data is a new currency. So if you are interested about data protection and trademark, you don't want to miss this week's episode of A Cup of Joe. This week, I'm having an incredible conversation with Nazaira Haig. She is the founder of Vantage Legal, a company which specializes in trade secret, data protection, GDPR, and trademark. Nazaira's experience is incredible. She holds the honor of being both California attorney and barrister in England and Wales, and she's been featured in so many publications such as Yahoo Finance and being top women attorneys in 2017. This is an episode that you want to listen over again, download and take notes as we cover so many interesting topics, especially about trademark on CBD. Now, have you subscribed to A Cup of Joe podcast yet? Well, if you haven't, make sure you do so straight away as I don't want you to miss my next episode. I always love to know who is tuning in. So if you're listening to A Cup of Joe right now, take your phone, take a screenshot of the episode, tag me on your Instagram story, let me know what are your biggest takeaways of today's show so that I can repost you. Now, before we dive in, I really want to give a shout out to Sonia, which hasn't only given me a 5-star review on iTunes, but took time out of her day to actually send me an email, which I really appreciated. Joe, thank you so much for your fabulousness. Thank you. And your inspirational podcast. I've been diving into it very much ever since I discovered it. I love the episode with Elizabeth Johnson that really resonates with me a lot. Thank you so much for empowering women and really give us the space to share our wisdom and experience. Thank you, Sonia, for sharing that. I really appreciate that because empowerment is one of my core values when it comes to my business. I really believe we cannot grow and progress and get to the next level and upscale if we don't support one another. Each and everyone online looks like they have everything figured out. They have a perfect life and everything is so polished. But what is really going on behind the scene, not lots of people know. So which is why I decided to come on board and to really share this on a podcast and give a voice to these pictures and this online space, if you will. So I'm really, really grateful and I appreciated that this value came across because that was one of my goals.
Welcome to A Cup of Joe, a weekly podcast discussing life and business. Grab a coffee and get comfortable. Here's your host, Joseph Rubelli.
Hi, Nazaira. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for coming on my show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Absolutely. Same here.
I am so looking forward to our conversation today because I think we're covering two of the most interesting topics when it comes to business, especially if you're just starting out as an entrepreneur. So we are covering trademarks and GDPR, and your career and your background and journey is so interesting because you are covering not only the US, but also the UK. So you can really take us through what the differences are. And I would love you to kind of start sharing a little bit more about who you are and how did you get to NH Legal, which is, of course, your amazing business.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for your question. So I practice intellectual property and internet law. Those are my two main areas of focus. And I'm based out of sunny Los Angeles. But because I run a virtual practice, I can practice from anywhere in the world. So it's not geographically restricted just to LA. I have my laptop and internet and I'm good to go. The way this started was that I've always loved traveling and I always wanted to have a lifestyle and a business that was flexible, you know, in terms of time and also gave me financial independence. And so that's how it really started. And I never wanted to be restricted to one particular country or territory. So even though my family was in Los Angeles, I went to law school in the UK. So I did my LLB from, you know, from England. I did my bar there. I qualified as a barrister for in England and Wales. And after I was done with that, so that was super fun, by the way. I loved my time in England. So after I was done with that, I came back home to Los Angeles. I finished my legal studies there, sat for the California bar exam, and, you know, then it started my life as a California attorney. And after I graduated, I was a corporate attorney for the first 4 years of my career. I was working at downtown boutique law firms as a corporate attorney, handling intellectual property matters and working on some really exciting stuff. So I got to work on design IP. I got to work with animation studios, and I also got to work on very controversial areas of law, such as cannabis. So, you know, yeah, so it was great. I had a lot of fun. I got to learn a lot, but I felt like slowly I was kind of burning out, which I don't know if you know, but a lot of lawyers will tell you about this, that you get burned out at a point because just the work is so stressful, plus your billable hours. It was just getting too much. And I wanted to, you know, not go on like that. There was no work-life balance. I wasn't having fun anymore with my work. And so I decided to sort of venture out on my own. And that's how NH Legal actually started. I wanted to have more flexibility in terms of time, but also the kind of solutions and like products and services that I wanted to offer my clients. I wasn't being able to do that if I stayed in the traditional corporate law firm structure. Mm-hmm. I always, you know, loved working with creative entrepreneurs and startups. And with the changing times, the kind of solutions you would offer them had to be, you know, had to adapt to those changing times. And you can't do that if you have to go through three layers of bureaucracy at a law firm. You know, it takes forever. So yeah,
it's not very practical, is it?
it's not very practical, you know. And oftentimes you're talking to very senior partners who have a breadth of knowledge and, you know, who definitely mean well, but for them to try to understand like what you're trying to say, why the solution is practical for this day and age, it takes time. And I guess I was just, you know, at a point where I thought, okay, I have the skills, I have the knowledge, and I'm kind of burning out in the structure. So let me just do something on my own that I'm actually happy about and proud of. So yeah, that's how NH Legal started.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you actually define yourself a creative entrepreneur, which I love. Yes. And walk me through, how was the jump from intellectual property to digital law? How does it look like?
Right, absolutely. So, you know, for me, I would say it wasn't so much of a jump, but it was more of an expansion.
Right.
So intellectual property is trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets, patents. Essentially, it's all data. That's what it is at the end of the day, and how you protect that data and make it into an asset.
Right.
So, you know, while I was working on my client's intellectual property protection, like on the client side, I was also very intricately involved with them when it came to their e-commerce and to see whether or not they were in compliance when they were putting up, you know, terms and conditions on their website. And as I was working on those things, I got very interested on the other side of data protection, which is, you know, from the user's point of view, what happens when you know, consumers and users visit your client's website, you know, how do they feel? How do they want their data to be used? So to me, that was very interesting. And I dived into it deeper. And it just felt like a natural expansion of what I was doing. And that's how I got really into GDPR and privacy law. So in a nutshell, I'd say like, that's how it happened.
And I love that because GDPR came out, I think, probably last year or a couple of years ago in the UK, I mean, in Europe, I mean, and it's been such a big change because it's the way you treat data differently for your clients. And I would love you to kind of walk me through, how does that apply between UK or Europe, actually more than UK, to the US, and how, where is the difference? And also, I know there are going to be some changes in 2020 for the CCP, which is the Consumer Privacy Act in California. Yeah. So I would love you to kind of walk me through that as well.
Yeah, for sure. So the GDPR is basically Europe's stand on privacy, on data protection, which was, you know, which is amazing, which is great. And it applies to basically the whole world, if you think about it. It's not really restricted just to the European Union. It applies to anyone who's doing business with EU citizens. Essentially, that's how it's structured. So it's to protect the EU citizen, no matter in which part of the world that business is located. So whenever you have a website, it mostly applies to that, you know, the digital platform, is whenever you have a website where you are collecting data. So say, for example, you have a wig selling business. You make wigs and hair extensions, and you are based in Florida, and you have the website, which is live, and it can be accessed by anyone in the world. Right. And you have, you know, EU citizens who want your wigs. They like your wigs and they want to order. It doesn't matter that you're not directly, you know, selling in Europe yet. You've not expanded into the European market. You're not running ads there. Irrelevant. Your website is on there. People can place orders and they're doing it. The fact that you are collecting, you know, their name, their email address, their mail address, their phone number, anything. This is all personal identifiable information. This is like the technical language of the GDPR. Mm-hmm. But the best way to understand it is that you are basically collecting information that helps you identify a consumer. And if you are doing that, then you owe them a certain level of responsibility and accountability. That is what the GDPR does, is it sets up a framework where you're accountable to your users. So if you're going to collect that information, you have to be transparent about how you're storing it, how you're using it, for what reasons you're using it, and what is your legal basis for using it. And also, if a consumer wants you to stop using their information, then you have to stop. If they want you to transfer that information to another organization, you have to be able to do that. So it's a lot of responsibility on companies and organizations that are in business now to basically step up their game and be transparent about how they process data and what they do with that data. So it puts that responsibility on companies. And the penalty for not complying with the GDPR is actually pretty high. So I think, if I'm not wrong, I think on the lower terrain, it's 2% or 10 million euros.
Wow.
Yeah. Or it's higher than that. And right. So, you know, it's just 2% of your annual global turnover.
Or exactly.
And the next level is, I think it's, 4% of your annual global turnover or 20 million euros, whichever is higher. It's amazing, like, the kind of risk that companies are at now if they're not in compliance with the GDPR. And even though it's based in Europe, it applies the same way to the UK, to any European Union country, and also to US businesses. So, you know, all of them, basically, if you're doing business, you just have to be aware of it now. And the other law that you mentioned, the CCPA, there's a California Consumer Privacy Act, which is going to come into effect next year, 2020 in California. And it's basically the first U.S. law, privacy law, which is going to be this thorough and comprehensive. So we don't have, like in the U.S., we don't have a GDPR equivalent yet on a federal level. But, you know, as they say, that California leads and the rest of the country follows.
So, yeah, normally.
Yeah, it's true. It's a thing.
You're a trendsetter for law.
we're trendsetters. What can I say? You know, even in this, I think California felt, the state of California felt, that also because we have Silicon Valley, and, you know, we had all of that controversy with Facebook's data breach and, you know, all of that happening in California. So California lawmakers felt that it was time that they stepped up and came up with a comprehensive law. And the CCPA has differences, obviously, from the GDPR, but the main goal is the same, which is to protect the data of consumers and how you use them, if you have permission to use them. And so if, say, a consumer wants you to stop using their email for marketing purposes, for example, or if they don't want you to send them newsletters anymore, or they want to opt out of something, they should have that provision. It should be easy to do that. You know, not like they have to, you know, ring your office 10 times, email the CEO, and then you're going to make something happen. No, it has to be very easy. Like, they click an option and they're out. They opt out. It's, you know, it's something like that. That's what the CCPA is aiming towards. And one important thing about the CCPA is that, which some of my clients are understandably nervous about is when they read the text of the CCPA, and it might change because CCPA, even though it's coming into effect next year, the text might change a little bit, that if you're doing business in California or basically doing business with California consumers, that's when the CCPA is, you know, applicable to you.
Right.
And you have to show how you use data for the last 12 months. So that's what's making some businesses nervous is that, okay, so it's going into effect next year, but last 12 months is this year as well. So how you use your data is going to be very, very important, you know, going forward, be it, you know, even if you're in Europe or in the US. I guess overall, the attitude now of lawmakers is to try to protect their consumers from data exploitation. If you know, that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, but it's really interesting how data is a new currency, right? Like we really, each and everyone values data so much because you can really have a picture of your ideal customer. So obviously this on a consumer point of view should be, as you said, protected because companies, and I noticed this when I sign up to any American website, any American newsletter, compare it to UK brands or whatever. Yeah. It could be anything from skincare to anything really. And there isn't really any protection for the consumer in the American website just yet. And you think this law is going to go on 2020, January, you said, or any particular month?
It's supposed to go into effect January 2020. But I believe that it might be edited a little more and change a little more. I think the state has till mid next year to finalize a version. So, you know, it can change. After January 2020, some provisions might be added, some provisions might be taken out. But the way as it stands now, it's data protection. At the end of the day, that's what it is. And it mainly applies to companies or businesses that sell data. So, for example, if you have email addresses from your users and you are transferring it to another company in exchange of something that you're receiving from that company, that's in a way you're selling information. So if you do that, then the CCPA applies to you like 100%. And also there are some provisions that, you know, like if you have to be a certain size of a business, if you're a very, very small business, most likely these kind of laws will not apply to you. But then again, that might change. So it's best that for business owners who are in that, you know, who are in the industry where they sell data or they buy data, I would just ask them to be a bit more careful, to go through their internal process and make sure that they're in compliance with these upcoming privacy laws. Because even though right now the businesses that it applies to is limited, it might just expand next year because it's not finalized yet, right? So it's a little up
in the
air.
Yeah, they can change it. I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing that because I think data protection is such a huge, you know, topic and is really underestimated very often. But you know, we are in a stage in this day and age where is getting so much more value each and every day. So it's really important that we already covered that. Another thing that is your zone of genius is trademark. And I would love you to kind of dive in into this because you have been one of the first attorneys to successfully obtain federal trademark protection for cannabis industry, which is one of your specialization, right? Where when it comes to trademark, right? So let's make an example. So, because one of the example that comes to me the most common at the moment is skincare and supplements, right? People are starting to put in CBD in each and every product. It's becoming a new trend at the moment. So let's say you are someone who is starting out a business, which is a product service based business, and you want to introduce CBD and you want to trademark it. What is the time frame looks like and what's the process behind that? Because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So trademarks in itself, it's not a very straightforward process because if you have a trademark that is relatively simple and that trademark is not confusingly similar to any other trademarks, then you can glide through the trademark process quite easily. You can get a registration. but that rarely happens. That's someone who's very lucky. Usually a trademark application will consist of, they're called office actions, but just to put it in layman's terms, it's like you get inquiries and legal inquiries from the Patent and Trademark Office, and you have to go back and forth with the Patent and Trademark Office. And that is for just generally for trademarks. So, and cannabis trademarks are a creature of its own because they are, that's the best way to put it, because you know they are still federally illegal. And so if you want to get a cannabis trademark, you can get it, which is, first of all, that needs to be cleared out. For the longest time, people thought you cannot get a cannabis trademark in the U.S. That's not true. You can, but in a limited capacity for certain kinds of products and services. So say if you are a service-based business in cannabis and you're doing service with, say you have a blog or a website where you talk about cannabis, anything related to that, you can get a trademark registration if it's filed properly and prosecuted properly. Because it's, we have freedom of expression in the United States. So it falls under that you're right to basically talk about something. So, you know, if you have a blog, website, podcast where you're talking about cannabis and you want to trademark it, yeah, it's high possibility that you are probably going to get a trademark if it's done correctly. And then moving on to product-based, this is where it gets a bit more complicated.
Right.
Because some products are allowed and some products are not allowed. So a cannabis plant usually has two parts, right? THC and CBD. THC is the psychoactive part, which is the fun part, gets you high. And CBD is the part.
One that is not on the cream, people.
Yes. And CBD is basically your medicinal part or the part that gives you the benefits. And a lot of brands have recently come out with CBD supplements or with products that have CBD in it. And the interesting thing is that the guidelines on cannabis and on CBD trademarks, it kind of changes every 3 to 4 months.
Because
it's not written on a book. It's not in the trademark manual. What happens is the FDA, which is the Federal Drug Administration, and the DEA, which basically does all the drug enforcement, these two agencies tell the United States Patent and Trademark Office what level of CBD is acceptable at a given time of the year, essentially. Right now, if you are making CBD products, if you are making edibles, which means supplements that you can, take in, the chances are not that great because supplements are regulated by the FDA.
Right.
And the FDA has not yet put, given a green light on CBD supplements. So, you never know. By the time you end up, submitting the application, maybe the laws would have changed. Maybe the regulations are different. But as it is right now, CBD supplements will be really, really difficult to get because the FDA most likely will not clear it. And hence the USPTO is going to, reject the application. But if you have CBD topicals, so for example, lotions, you're a skincare brand and you're making CBD lotion, CBD balms and oils and moisturizers, and it has hemp CBD in it, then there's a high chance right now, if everything is done correctly, if you're doing the right thing in the application, that your application may get approved. But again, anything to do with cannabis is never a sure shot answer. You kind of have to work with your attorney, make sure whichever attorney that you're working with understands cannabis law. That is very crucial because intellectual property in itself is a niche. Cannabis IP is a niche in a niche, if that makes any sense. And there are attorneys out there that practice cannabis IP. So I would say work with cannabis IP attorneys if you're doing cannabis trademark applications because you want to get it right. It's very expensive. You don't want to get it wrong. And far as time frame is concerned, it usually takes the USPTO about 3 months to start investigating an application once you file it. So if you submit an application, especially for a cannabis trademark, it's going to take a little longer because you would have to go back and forth with the USPTO explaining about your product, your service, answering legal questions. So I would say keep at the very least 6 months in hand before you get a final result on your trademark.
Right. It's so fascinating because I come from beauty industry. So you cover so many things that I used to deal with and, you know, trademarks, but especially for, as you said, for supplement is, I was going to say, is the most difficult one because obviously it's something that you take. Exactly. What a topic solution will be a different kind of application process, if you will. So yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. It was really interesting. And you have been recently featuring Yahoo Finance for actually talking about property rights for cannabis brands. So I would love you to kind of dive in a little bit more about what your service are and where people can find you as well. Because I think if anybody out there is kind of thinking of going through this journey with cannabis product, I think you could be the right person for it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Yahoo Finance was a really fun interview. It was actually an interview with a couple of attorneys that did in the cannabis space, and they wanted to get opinions from different spectrum. And let's just say I didn't agree with most of the attorneys. I think only because my experience or my philosophy with not only with cannabis trademarks, but with any trademarks is that it shouldn't be a piece of paper that you just hang on your wall. It should be something that you actually use, are able to enforce, able to monetize. That's the whole point of getting a trademark, is that you can use it, license it, you know, sell it, buy it. It's an asset, and it should be useful to you. For the longest time, what unfortunately happened is that a lot of trademark attorneys, because cannabis was so confusing, what they would do is not file an application for the cannabis product or service itself, but for parallel goods. So for say you are a, you know, a cannabis brand, and at some show, at some festival or some fair, you had people wearing t-shirts with your brand name on it.
Right.
But that was more for, if you think about it, for promotional purposes. T-shirts is not your main product. That's just something you
That's merchandise.
That's merchandise. That's your PR. But a lot of the attorneys, unfortunately, what they were doing was they're getting trademarks for these t-shirts or clothing or hats or something, some parallel product with the brand name on it. And, you know, the clients were happy because they got a trademark. But at the end of the day, that trademark is pretty useless, because if another cannabis brand came up with, say, edibles or any other cannabis product that had a similar name to yours or was using the same logo as yours, you couldn't go after them with your clothing trademark, because it's not the same thing. You got a trademark for clothing, not for cannabis. So you had to be a really big brand. Like, you have to be a brand on the level of like Balenciaga or Apple or Microsoft, that your brand is so big that even if you make any product with the name Microsoft or Apple on it, people will automatically think, oh, that comes from the real Microsoft or Apple. But if you're just a business starting out and you don't have that level of fame, you can't really defend that trademark. And so the Yahoo Finance interview was basically on that. Like, how do you monetize your trademark? And my point was that you can't monetize it if you don't use it for the right reasons, and also if you don't have the correct type of trademark.
Right.
So that was essentially it, that you have to get the trademark for the cannabis product, for the cannabis service. And there are ways to get it, but you just have to do it properly. That's about it. And that's what the interview was about. But it was a fun interview. It was a friendly debate. we learned a lot from each other. And where can people find me? Well, people can find me on my website, which is nhlegal.net. So it's up and it's live finally, thank God. And so people can find me there. And I have to apologize that I haven't been very good with my own marketing and promotions. So even so, but it's my New Year resolution that I'm definitely going to have a more active business page on Instagram. I do have a business page on both Instagram and Facebook, and it's
That's great.
Yeah, which is at IP Law Boutique. So it's IP Law and then BOUTIQUE. So that's that. Or you can always hang out with me on my personal Insta page, which is my first name, which is Nuzaira. It's just Nuzayra. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Before we wrap this up, I'm going to ask you a question that I ask to all my guests. Five years from now, we having a chat over a cup of Joe, and I ask you, how is life treating you? What's your answer?
Oh my God, 5 years from now. Wow. I would say I'm very happy to see you again.
Yes. So, nobody says that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm very happy to see you again. I'm happy that we're chatting. Also, I would say that I'm happy business has grown. It's more stable and I'm doing, you know, interesting work. I'm continuing to, you know, help entrepreneurs and creative professionals. And on my personal front, I'd say, I think my family would expand. Probably I would have a kid by then.
Amazing.
Yeah. And one thing I would like to add is that I've always been very passionate about girls' education in developing countries. And I've worked very closely with UNICEF's Next Gen, based in Los Angeles, where we provide, you know, tools and resources for young girls, mostly in, you know, West African countries where it's difficult to have access to education. So hopefully within the next 5 years, I hope, I don't have it set in my mind what it is going to be exactly, but I hope I would have done something that had a bigger impact in furthering that cause.
That's amazing. This is fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm really happy that you actually brought it up because I know it was one of your key points, especially in the future. So yeah, really, I'm sure you're going to be able to do something incredible with that. And yeah, so if we have another interview, you're going to let me know about it because I'm pretty curious about that as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for covering so much. We cover so many interesting topic and so many challenging topic for so many entrepreneurs out there as well, because, you know, cannabis was something that I was really keen to talk about because it's such a new trend and so complicated is the behind the scene of the process. And, you know, you really clarified that better. So thank you so much for that. And you guys, if you have any problem with trademarking GDPR or you really want some data protection, really go over to Azuria. She is amazing. So make sure you do that. Thank you so much for being on my show. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for today. Do you know when the best conversation happened? Actually, after the show. So I want you to go over on Facebook and look for my new community out there. It's called Empower You, Uplevel Your Content and Your Business. This is where I empower young entrepreneurs just like you to discover and embrace their zone of genius. This new growing community is the right place for you if you are an entrepreneur looking for ways to connect with your tribe, or if you have an incredible idea that you know you can turn into a business and you're looking to connect with the right people. Covering topics such as marketing, PR, online branding, website, and so on. If anything like this resonates with you, come and join us. I will see you same time, same place next week.